This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
There's a very interesting story out of Louisiana. We're going to talk about that tonight. We have a whistleblower on what's going on here in Texas, and there are national, should be national implications for all this. All that, so much more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's talk about the Supreme Court, because you've been on the edge of your seat. I've been on the edge of my seat waiting for these Supreme Court rulings. We're waiting on the Supreme Court to rule on things like Trump's immunity. How immune is he? Is he all the way immune? Don't expect that. Is he not immune at all? Don't expect that. They're probably going to split the baby some way. We're waiting on all these things, and none of those things came down today. We did have Supreme Court opinions that came down today. If you want those broken down, if you're really interested in all that stuff, America on Trial with Josh Hammer, he always breaks all that stuff down for you, and he will get down to the nitty-gritty of it. Now, let's dig into the Supreme Court here. In fact, more than the Supreme Court, let's dig into you and me and the country we have now. I have said this before. I say it as often as I can. And I understand that it is hard to hear, and it angers people or scares people or saddens people, but that's not the intention. The intention is that me, you, all of us, that we understand where we live, we understand how we should act in these times, and we're never going to be able to act appropriately if we don't understand what kind of country we live in. So allow me to say this again. The next 10, 20, 30, 40 years in the United States of America will look nothing like the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years. No matter your age, maybe you're 42 like me, maybe you're 82, maybe you're 2. Well, no matter your age, the country we are becoming, where we're going, will not look like where we left. In a lot of ways, it's going to be really bad. In a lot of ways, we'll figure it out, and we'll get through it. But there are things that we must understand and accept, like, for the instance, the Supreme Court, because that's really what we're talking about here. You know, the supreme law of the land, all these other things. The Supreme Court says so, and that's the way it goes. That's how it used to be. Those days are gone now. Those days are gone now. Remember when the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, which was the right decision? What was the response? The federal government, the Justice Department, immediately declared war on pro-lifers across the country in response to a Supreme Court decision. They started arresting grandmas and throwing them in prison. We're in a totally different ballgame now. The Supreme Court ruled on things like student debt relief. You know, the president of the United States of America is not a king, a dictator. He doesn't just get to say, hey, you, taxpayer, give me your money. I'm going to take it and I'm going to pay off this guy. He can't do that. It's against the law. The Supreme Court said, you can't do that. It's against the law. The president said, watch me.
Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us. And the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
They just brag about it now. One of Joe Biden's communications people, he got real famous yesterday thanking Joe Biden. Thanks, Joe! Guy had $8,300 in student loan debt. He's had it since 2010. I need to point out that's less than $600 a month. He could have paid off the entire thing very, very quickly. He didn't. And because the moron put his address online, we now know he lives in a $500,000 home in you. Working man, working woman, just paid off his student loans. What's happening right now in the speed with which it's happening in the country is changing everything. So this country is not going to look like the country you've known. And here's what really sucks about this. And I say this as someone who's 42. This will be more difficult for me than it will be for my sons. My sons are 13 and 15. It will be more difficult for my parents than it will be for me. Age is a consideration here, because how long have you lived in a normal country? You've gotten used to living in a normal country if you're of a certain age. This new, wild America, it's going to be harder to accept for people who are older. It just, the older you are, the harder it will be. But things are coming now. And they're bad. And we have to talk about it. Let's talk about the budget deficit. We are running, according to the Congressional Budget Office now, a $1.9 trillion budget deficit for the year of 2024. Now, I need you to take this thing, so I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of numbers and things like that. So let's just set aside the details. I think that's $200 a month, and if you stack the dollar bills, that means nothing to people. Allow me to explain this. That will end us quickly. No nation can do that. That kind of spending, historically, has only ever been in response to not just any war, a huge war, you know, World War II. That's when you would spend, that's when a government would spend that much more than they're taking in. We're in an emergency situation. Oh my gosh. If there was an actual pandemic, a natural disaster wiping out things, it would take something incredible to justify running that kind of a budget deficit. There are no world wars. There's no pandemic. There's no nothing going on, and the federal government is now spending $1.9 trillion more than we are taking in. We are spending as if it's World War III, but it's not World War III. We currently are in a currency crisis, so we should be spending less than we have ever. That's why you can't afford eggs, rent, shoes, flights, gas. You can't afford these things because of Washington spending. So at a time when they should be slashing and burning every single part of the federal budget, they are spending more than they've ever spent before. Every horrible thing right now is accelerating. And it's going to create some things. And look, I want to talk really quickly about the Supreme Court, about the courts, about the law, about the states, because there's a great story out of Louisiana. Louisiana passed a law, and they said, in the classroom, you will display the Ten Commandments. It's now a requirement in Louisiana, you will display the Ten Commandments. And of course, the ACLU's mad about it. All these people are mad about it. Everyone's trying to use your values against you. Oh, we now don't have a religion. It should be tolerant of our other religions. What about Islam and the Jehovah's Witnesses?
I'm very opposed to it. And it's not anything to do with disliking religion. It's just that there are different religions that exist in our communities. I've taught Jehovah's Witnesses. I've taught Muslim students. I have really great Muslim teacher friends who are going to now have to display Christianity as the accepted or promoted religion in our state.
Yeah, it should be the promoted religion in your state. It's fine with the country having a religion. It's fine with a state having a religion. Doesn't mean you want to be intolerant of other religions, but nations have religions. The reason that Haag is upset about this ruling, the reason so many people are upset about this ruling, is they don't like the religion that was chosen. You see, they want this to remain the U.S. of gay. They want communism to remain the only religion in schools. Do you think it's an accident the schools have gotten more and more putrid the further away the Ten Commandments have gotten from them? You want to live in a decent society? It will be a society that has chosen a decent religion. You want to live in a despicable, depraved society where we chop penises off in hospitals? Well, then you can choose the religion of communism. And maybe this ruling, maybe it made you uncomfortable. Maybe you don't like the Ten Commandments. Maybe you are a Muslim or an atheist or something like that. That's fine. That's fine. I get that. But understand something. there will be a religion in this country. I don't care what you say or what I say about it. That's not an opinion. Nations have religions. You gotta choose one. And don't make the mistake of doing the nursery rhyme conservatism thing. I just want school to teach math. Schools, they're filled with teachers. Teachers teach students. Teachers are not robots. They are human beings, flesh and blood human beings with religions. Your child will be taught religion in school. Now, whether it's a public school or private one, you better choose the right one. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Let's talk about the U.S. of gay. Let's talk about the kind of country we live in. Do you understand that you live in the country where a children's hospital is illegally chopping penises off of young boys, and the whistleblower who came forward about it, the federal government's trying to throw him in prison for coming forward? We're going to talk to that whistleblower in a moment. Before we talk to him, speaking of sharing your values, we talk about blackout coffee. We have to be purposeful now. Right now. In everything that we do. Where we shop, too. The cup of coffee we drink. It matters. Where you spend and don't spend your money matters. And I'll tell you something that's inspiring me. You look at these Disney stock prices and things like that. The right is starting to get it. We are starting to get that we have to be purposeful with where we spend and don't spend our money. Get your coffee at Blackout Coffee. They don't just share your values, they promote your values. They'll deliver you the best coffee you've ever had in your life to your front door, big discount, and they promote your values. BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse. We'll be back. It's time to talk about our medical institutions and the kind of country we live in. You see, Texas Children's Hospital is an internationally revered children's hospital. People fly from all over the world to have their children treated there. And most people don't realize this children's hospital is still performing child mutilation within its walls. And we have a very, very brave man who has come forward, works there, is now, well, the federal government's trying to throw him in a cage for what he's saying, but let's talk to him about who he is, what he saw, and what's going on now. Joining me now, Dr. Eitan Heim. He is a former Texas Children's Hospital surgeon, medical whistleblower. Doctor, before we get into everything else that's going on, who are you? What's your background?
Thank you for having me on. My name is Eitan Heim. I grew up in Florida, got a brother and a sister, two parents, very close with all of them. I mean, it's the most average, typical upbringing you could ever imagine. I thought I was going to just have a regular life, go to medical school, you know, get a job, live in a very small town. That's what we always dreamed of. But all that changed when I saw what was happening at Texas Children's. And now they're trying to throw me in a federal prison for up to 10 years. And if anyone wants to help with our legal fight, I mean, this is going to be upwards of possibly $1 million. They can go to givesendgo.com/Texas_whistleblower.
Walk us through the timeline. What happened? What was going on? What'd you get wind of? Why'd you come forward? The floor is yours. Take your time. What happened?
Yeah. So I was a surgical resident at Baylor College of Medicine. And for people who aren't familiar with that, that's the training you do after medical school. It can last anywhere from 3 to 5 years, sometimes longer, depending on the specialty. For me, it was general surgery, which is 5 years. So when you're at academic institution like Baylor College of Medicine, you're at a couple hospitals. One of those is Texas Children's, which is really, it's an amazing hospital. And it's unfortunate about this story because it's a shame on their prestige. But it was in March of 2022 that the hospital had released a public statement unequivocally saying that they were going to shut down their transgender program. And they said they were going to do so in order to avoid potential criminal liability. And that's an important point I want to highlight. They had acknowledged that there was potential criminal liability. The reason they said that was because a few weeks before, 2 or 3 weeks, the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, had issued an opinion saying that these interventions could be investigated as child abuse, which they are. So it makes sense as to why the hospital would release that statement, right? They want to protect themselves from any legal liability. But it was in the following few months that I realized this was completely untrue. And I knew this because I was working there. I was doing surgery there. And the people who were doing these procedures had told me they were doing them. And I didn't believe it. Like, it just seemed so insane that an otherwise great hospital, Texas Children's, would actually lie to the public about something like this and not only continue the program, but expand it. Because in the next couple of months, more and more people were telling me that they were doing this, right? And the stories got more and more crazy, and the kids got younger and younger. 11, 12, 13-year-old kids. All these psychiatric issues which were being ignored. Kids who were saying that they were for sure never going to have children. And they're 11 years old, right? How can they ever even conceive of that? Even with that, I didn't believe it. It was only in January of 2023 that all the doubt exited in my mind, because the directors of the program that supposedly did not exist, the directors of the transgender program, were given the opportunity to speak at the hospital's most prestigious lecture series, which means that this was like an institutional priority. Everyone knew about it. It wasn't just like a couple of rogue physicians, but you know, it was everyone in the administration. And they talked about their algorithmic approach, right, to blockers, hormone surgery, right? How general pediatricians should ask about gender identity behind the backs of their parents. And this is a priority, right? They only do the lectures that they want to prioritize. But it was 2 weeks after that there was an open public Zoom conference with multiple members of the transgender program, right? The one that supposedly was shut down, and like 150 medical students. And a social worker had specifically talked about how they would conceal the program itself from governing medical bodies in Texas. She had said that instead of documenting consults to the clinic, right from hers, she would call them, and she wouldn't give any paper copies of anything to parents. And, you know, a lot of people may not be able to appreciate that, but in medicine, you have to document everything, like everything. That's like the absolute critical component of our job. And so I knew that at that point, right, you have children who are at imminent harm, imminent risk of harm. And I'm not fulfilling my oath as a doctor if I don't do something about it. And it's a very hard decision because you know there's risk involved. You know that this is a dominant political ideology, and these people are likely going to come after me. But at some point, like, how can I really call myself a doctor, live with myself, if I didn't do something? Especially seeing how children can suffer from chronic medical conditions, and what they're doing is taking healthy patients, healthy kids, and turning them into that, like, we're there to heal kids, not create sick patients for life. So I started reaching out to journalists in January of 2023. And it took me 5 months to get a hold of someone who would report the story, because people would didn't even believe me. And these were all the organizations you would think would take a story like this. But, and like, you know, no hard feelings. Like, you know, if they have other things going on, or it's kind of a crazy story, so if they didn't believe me, you know, that's fine. But I finally got a hold of Christopher Rufo in mid-May of 2023. And this was perfect timing, because about a week and a half after that, the Texas Senate was voting on a bill called SB 14. This was the law that was going to ban these interventions for children who believe they were transgender. So he knew it was important. He knew this was something that he needed to pursue. So we go through the verification process, make sure I'm a real person, make sure the story's real. And the story comes out on May 16th, 2023. I'm the anonymous whistleblower. The story explains how the hospital said one thing to the public, did the exact opposite behind closed doors. They said they were shutting it down, but they continued it and expanded it, made it into an institutional-wide priority, right? The story blows up, and it does exactly what we hoped it would. Within 24 hours of our story coming out, the conduct we had exposed was voted to become illegal in a bill that was passed with both Republicans and Democrats. And it was because our story came out that Democrats had voted in favor of it, because a lot of them didn't even know this was happening, right? Like at that time, people think that, this is something that happens to so few people. It's not real, you know, but the story came out the day before. So the bill got passed. A few days later, another whistleblower comes out to Rufo, someone who worked with these doctors and was horrified by what she saw. And she recently came out in a story with Chris Rufo 2 days ago, in an even crazier story. I mean, that's a separate thing we could talk about, but then the CEO about a week later says that he's gonna shut down the program in accordance with SB 14. I'm anonymous at the time. And about 4 or 5 weeks later, I'm graduating from my surgical training. It's June 23rd, 2023. Story came out May 16th, 2023. So it's a Friday, the day of my graduation from surgical training, one of the most important days of my life. And, you know, I have my family in town. Like, you make all these sacrifices over the previous few years. You give up so much, right? 80, 90, 100 hours a week. But now you have the privilege of becoming a surgeon. So the day you graduate is a big deal. And my wife and I were getting ready for the ceremony. And all of a sudden, I get an aggressive knock on the door. And I'm like, man, that's weird. It was odd. So I shuffle over. I'm wearing like some stupid t-shirt, like some shorts from college. And I open him. Standing outside are two armed federal agents with Health and Human Services. They show me their badges and tell me that they're investigating a case regarding medical records. And, you know, of course, in that moment, you kind of just freeze. But in the back of my mind, I knew exactly why they were there, right? We had challenged the dominant political ideology. They needed to make an example out of me, because it's people in healthcare, doctors and nurses, that is the last support beam that's holding up this evil, twisted ideology. Because once that falls, these people will have to come to a full term. You know, they'll have to face the true nature of what they've been doing. Because once you have doctors and nurses start speaking out, then everything comes crumbling down. So, you know, kind of freak out in the moment. I invite him in because I didn't know what to do, right? Like, doorway is very awkward. It's easy to say, like, yeah, you wouldn't talk to him, you know, but when you're in that moment, like, you understand why they do it that way, because it's terrifying, absolutely terrifying. So I invite him in, we sit down. And, you know, they want to do an interview. So they set up a little tripod. But luckily, my wife comes out. And she is a brilliant attorney. And just as a point in later in the story, she had been hired just a little bit before that as a assistant U.S. attorney in the Department of Justice in the Northern District of Texas. And she was undergoing a background check at the time. They didn't know that. But so, you know, my wife is like my... Yeah, she was my sugar mom at the time and also my attorney, which was great. But I love her. You know, she's the greatest person. I mean, the toughest person you could ever imagine. So we both knew we needed to talk. So we go back to our bedroom and we say, you know, not the best idea to speak with them without an attorney present. So we go back out, we tell them that, and they say, okay, they leave. But before leaving, they hand me a target letter, piece of paper, that informed me that I was a potential target of a criminal investigation. And it was signed by an assistant US attorney, same position as my wife, the one that she had been hired, but it was a prosecutor in the Southern District of Texas. So we knew that a couple of minutes after that door opened, you know, and it closed, like, our lives would be different forever. But we had a decision to make, right? It's like, I had enough information at that time that the Department of Justice had been weaponized against innocent people, against people who believed in virtue, people who believed in objective truth and dignity and morality. And they were being targeted because of their attributes, because of the things that makes them good. And the only way to fight back is to not give in, like to fight back aggressively. Yeah. Because when you grant them the legitimacy, when it's like, we know that they're not pursuing justice, they're not pursuing truth. You know, if I believe my innocence is my grace.
It's turned into a terrible situation in the country. It's mm-hmm. what they're doing is evil, and what they're doing to you is wrong, and it makes me sick what has happened to this country. You keep fighting. We are rooting for you, doctor. Please keep on keeping on. It's a terrible story. All right. We have to talk about our new national religion. Before we talk about that, let's talk about something that's awesome. Lone Star Transfer. Don't you love the good guy when he comes and saves you from the bad guy? At least we like watching movies about it. Well, these timeshare companies are bad. Not all of them, but most of them. Because they trap you. They don't advertise that you're stuck in the timeshare. They try to say, hey, come get a place on the beach. And then when you're done with it, they say, ooh, sorry. You're stuck for life. That's when Lone Star Transfer comes in and saves the day. This family business will get you out of your timeshare, legally and permanently. They put it in writing. Call them. 844-310-2646. You're one phone call from being free. All right? We'll be back. Well, in case you thought it couldn't get any weirder or just kind of gross, isn't all this tranny stuff just kind of gross? Daily Wire is doing some reporting out there. The intelligence community in the country, well, they're really enjoying Pride Month. You can get free tranny manicures. I'm not exactly sure what they're painting on your fingers, nor do I want to know. The largest pilots union in the country, they don't want to call it a cockpit anymore. I always thought just that was the bar these people went to. But either way, that's where we are as a country. Joining me now, two wonderful people to discuss this insanity, Jim Pfaff, president of the Conservative Caucus, and of course, Keisha King, host of the Keisha King Show. Jim, I don't know where to begin. What's a tranny manicure? Maybe I should ask that one to Keisha.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the functionality is, except to try to abruptly change culture in any way. And I cannot find one reason why we're going to have a safer country through our intelligence operations by making sure people get their fingernails colored a special rainbow color. It's amazing to me.
Keisha, it really grosses me out how ingrained this stuff is in society. Obviously, if San Francisco, if Berkeley's going to have tranny day, no, you're not going to be shocked. I'm not going to be shocked. I'm never going to go to Berkeley, nor could I ever get into Berkeley. But the problem is our government, which is way too big, they're the ones promoting this around the world, and we pay for it. It disgusts me.
You're absolutely right. We don't, you know, we think that this is isolated. We want it to be isolated, but it's not. This is being ingrained in our culture so deeply. I was on the train in New York City a few weeks ago, and I saw like the MTA has got like the flag, the new trans flag. And it just got me to thinking about flags and what that means. And when we take this on into our country, a flag says, when you are waving a flag and it has been implanted down, it says, I am taking over. I am staking my claim in this land. And that's what these flags mean. It's the BLM flag. It is the transgender flag. It is the new, you know, pro for the free Palestine flag. All of these flags, and they are under the same banner. Communism, like these people are communist. They are not, it's really not about the transgenderism or the Black Lives Matter or, you know, whomever. They will use whomever, whatever they want to accomplish their revolution, and they're doing a good job.
You're right. Different fingers of the same dirty communist fist. Jim, how many Americans do you think are aware of what Keisha just said? I feel like the branding for the left has been very effective. If they look at, you know, a feminist rally with all the Subarus and everything, they would think, well, at least they probably at least pretend to care about women, that Black Lives Matter. They care about Black people, of course, you know, and all the gay crap with the pink feather boas. But it's not about that at all. The question is, how many Americans are picking up on that?
Yeah, very few, frankly, in terms of getting a comprehensive understanding of what these people are trying to do. This goes back to the cultural Marxist philosophy of Antonio Gramsci, someone no one has heard about. His works were printed up after his death. But, you know, he really was pushing for a new Marxism. Once the fall of Russia, once Russia was really losing its capability to win the Cold War, he wanted, and he knew it was going to fall down, he wanted to go in and infiltrate culture deeply to maintain a cultural Marxist ideology. So that means infiltrating and controlling cultural institutions, creating a sense of crisis and instability. This is the game plan that these people are undertaking, and do not be at all confused by the fact or unaware of the fact that whether it's Rashida Tlaib and AOC and other elected members of Congress and what's going on in your universities, that this is not part of a specific plan. In fact, it's Barack Obama's community organizing as well. I mean, this is what's happening in plain sight. And as you say, not always understood well by the public.
Keisha, why are they better at organizing and activism than we are on the right? Wherever people fall on the right, I don't care how you classify yourself, but they are really good at it. It's what they do, and we don't. Why?
They practice a totalitarian, collectivist way of thinking. So their worldview is, when we approach you, we have a very specific type that we want. You know, those are who are angered and those who are on the fringe and, you know, kind of like the misfits of society. They agitate them and then they train them. This is where what we don't do on our side, they train them. If you guys remember Patrice Cullors from the BLM, she said, we are trained Marxists. And that means knowing how to poke the bear, you know, knowing how to cause a civil unrest, knowing how to throw a brick and hide, knowing how to agitate communities. They literally, and that's what the community organizing was, training others in a particular community to go in and be disruptive so you can divide and then you can conquer. And we don't spend enough time assimilating, you know, people to our way. I don't want us to be collectivists, but we should practice persuasion. We should present our ideas and say, hey, here's what they're presenting. Here's the long-term effects of that. Here's what we have over here. Here are the long-term effects of this. And we have proof of a westernized civilization that backs up our way of life. And they have their evidence as well. And it has all led to murder, chaos, and utter destruction of every single nation, civilization, community that they have ever put their hands on.
It is true. We are way too passive about freedom. Freedom is not a passive thing. It's got to be an active thing. Speaking of active things, Jim, I was encouraged yesterday to see the Ten Commandments is going back in the schools in Louisiana anyway. And if anyone has a problem with that, I don't give a crap. That's exactly where the Ten Commandments should be. Jim, people have a hard time understanding that nations have religions. There's no such thing as an atheist nation or a secular nation. Your nation's going to have one. You better pick one.
That's absolutely right. By the way, I'm really excited that we have maybe one of the best governors in the nation. My friend, Jeff Landry, when I was working on Capitol Hill, I was with him. The guy is brilliant. He comes across like swamp people, Louisiana. He's a fascinating mind, but he's also fearless. You know, what's interesting about the Ten Commandments debate that has often been neglected is that there is hardly a religion in the world that doesn't assert the Ten Commandments in one form or another. C.S. Lewis wrote a famous book back in the 1940s called The Abolition of Man. And he was talking about, this is where you get that men without chests quote, you know, we take the organ out and demand the function. We take the heart out and demand something to happen. And in the back of that book, he made a very comprehensive review of various religions and their thoughts and teachings on issues related to what's in the Ten Commandments. And you find out, it doesn't matter if it's Norse culture or Hindu culture, various European cultures, and various ones from around the world, even African cultures, they assert these principles. So this is not a violation of church and state. This is actually an affirmation of the principles that we hold most dear. And in fact, on the House floor, if you look up at the top of the House floor, you see all the various lawmakers throughout history. Right in the very middle, in front of the speaker's chair, is Moses, the lawgiver. And Moses is the only face that is a frontal face like this. The rest of them are facades on the side. There's a purpose and a reason for that our founding fathers and those early in this country understood, that Moses, the lawgiver, gave the foundation for all good moral behavior and good moral government. In fact, reduced government.
Keisha, final word is yours.
I love to see it. I want the Bible to be brought back, to be presented to children. As a mom and as a fighter for education, proper education in America, I would like the Bible to be presented as at the very least, a historical document. Let's give kids something to compare another narrative to consider. We don't give them anything else to consider. They get a one-sided view of everything, including evolution theory. And so there's never any other ideas that are presented to kids that are long held and relevant, and that could actually teach them how to be better people, and that it is not all about you, and that there is something greater to press towards. And so I love this idea, and I think we can see this across the nation. I would love to, and in a historical context that I think people would be hopefully willing to accept.
No doubt about it. Keisha, Jim, appreciate you both. All right. Let's talk to one of the few good people in Congress. There aren't that many. Harriet is one of them. We're going to talk to her. Before we talk to Harriet, let's talk about you and that crappy sleep you've been getting. Been tossing and turning, waking up half dead, miserable. Isn't it miserable? It's like your eyes, it's like someone's rubbing them with sandpaper when you haven't slept. Oh, I've been there. Not anymore, of course. I have dream powder. If I'm going into a night where I've had too much caffeine or stressed about something, if I'm worried about not sleeping, I have myself a little cup of hot chocolate before bed. But it's dream powder hot chocolate. Mine's cinnamon chocolate. It's delicious. And because it's all natural, I'll drift off to sleep. And then I'll wake up and I'll feel great. Not groggy. Great. That's the problem. There's a million things you can take to sleep. You always want to die the next day if you haven't slept for 18 hours. Not with dream powder. Go to sleep, 8 hours, wake up, you'll be ready. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly gets you 40% off. We'll be back.
President Biden, he campaigned on making a safe, orderly, and humane immigration system. Do you believe that that has been accomplished?
We work at that every single day across the Department of Homeland Security, across our administration, with our partners to the south and around the world. We have established more lawful, safe, and orderly pathways than any other administration, and we are working every day to strengthen the security of our border.
His voice bothers me. There's something about his voice that makes me just... Anyway, I wonder if it bothers the Congresswoman joining me now. There aren't very many congresspeople I like, and she's awesome. The awesome congresswoman from Wyoming, Harriet Hageman, she is on the House Judiciary Committee. Congresswoman, before we get to what they're doing on the border, doesn't his voice bother you?
Yes, and I've had the opportunity to sit in a room with him, and after sitting there for several hours, I can tell you that it grates like fingernails on a chalkboard.
I'm sure it does. Okay, beyond his hideous voice, they're so brazen, and honestly, that's one of the things that really takes me back is how they just go on television and brag. They're picking people up down in South America and shipping them all over the country. They brag about what they're doing.
They lie about what they're doing. The fact is that they are not finding additional legal pathways for immigrants to come to this country. That's not their job. Their job is to enforce the immigration laws that are on the books. It's not for them to find different ways to make them legal. The fact is that they're doing mass paroles into the country in violation of law. They're doing catch and release in violation of the law. Anyone who is seeking asylum is not allowed to come into this country and just be released willy-nilly the way that they're doing it. So what he's doing is, as you say, he's bragging about the fact that they're violating the law and they're attempting to act as though they have the authority to do that.
Your colleagues, your Democrat colleagues in Congress, do they deny that they're trying to burn this place down on purpose? It's obvious to anyone paying attention that's what they're doing, but what do they tell you privately? They surely don't believe the hype, right?
Yes, they do. That's what's so sad and disturbing. And what I'm seeing are photographs that you're playing right now of the environmental devastation associated with this mass migration. And yet when we try to raise those kinds of things in the Natural Resource Committee, for example, they deny that they're happening. We actually raised this issue with Deb Haaland, who is a former member of Congress, and she's now the head of the Department of Interior. On average, every single illegal who has crossed that border has brought in over 8 to 10 pounds of garbage with them, which means that we have as much as 100 million pounds of garbage that has been strewn across the southern border. And so the great environmentalists in the Democrat Party ignore all of that. This has had devastating consequences for our environment, for our schools, for our hospitals, for our communities, for our families. By every single metric, this has been one of the worst disasters in the history of the United States, and they won't even acknowledge that it's happening.
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking of garbage, let's talk about Merrick Garland. He was held in contempt of Congress. He's, of course, announced that he's not going to arrest himself. But what can we do to that human being from here? I know Anna Paulina Luna was talking about the sergeant at arms. Where do we go from here? You can't have an AG do what he's doing with that position. You can't.
Well, that's exactly right. And what the issue is that we are entitled to receive the information, the interview between Special Counsel Herr and Joe Biden. And they have already turned over the transcript of that interview. Now, they've admitted that transcript is not accurate as to what was actually said during the interview. They claim that there are just minor changes, but they're changes we're entitled to see. So the issue is they will not allow us to have that audio tape. And I think what that audio tape demonstrates is that Joe Biden is suffering from severe dementia, which we're seeing every day on TV. But I think for the American people, they recognize that this would just be the death knell in his campaign. So Garland is withholding that, and I actually handled the debate in front of the Rules Committee last week in support of the bill to hold him in contempt of Congress. And the point that we have made is that, number one, they've already waived any claim of privilege by turning over the transcript. Number two, in our oversight role, we're entitled to have that transcript. Number three, we're entitled to know why Mr. Herr decided not to prosecute Joe Biden despite finding that he had withheld classified documents to which he was not entitled, while at the same time they're persecuting Donald Trump for that alleged crime. So there are all kinds of reasons as to why he should be held in contempt. But the fact is, Merrick Garland is a political hack. He has been since the moment he took that office. And I think that it is devastating to our legal community and to the rule of law that he has undertaken some of the acts that he has.
How do we fix our red state delegations? And I wanted to ask you this because you're a bright, shining example of one state that's starting to get it right. You bounced Liz Cheney in the primary, which is freaking wonderful. But Wyoming is just like my state, Texas. I mean, all these red states elect the biggest losers humanly possible in their state legislature. The Senate seats in these states, gosh, John Cornyn from Texas, make me vomit. Why are these red state GOPs so lame?
You know, I think that that's a very good question that we need to start delving into in a lot more detail. But I think that we need to hold people accountable when they run for office to actually vote the way that they claim that they're going to. You and I both know that when people run for the state legislature, they often say, oh, I'm the most conservative person out there. And I'm going to fight Joe Biden and I'm going to fight back, whether it's our governors or our legislators, either one. We're going to push back and you won't find anybody more conservative than me. And boy, I adhere to the platform, and then they get in office and that's not the way that they vote. And I think that Wyoming is a very good example of a one-party state where so many of the Democrats now run as Republicans. And as a result, our legislature oftentimes votes on things that are quite stunning. In fact, it took us a while to get Chloe's Law in place. It took us two legislative sessions to be able to keep boys from competing in girls' sports. This last legislative session, our budget was over $9 billion. There are 560,000 people in the state of Wyoming. Our governor put forward a budget of over $9 billion. That doesn't count the federal funds that we get. So what does happen is it's incredibly important that people look at the voting record. These races are decided in the primaries. They're not decided in the general elections when you're a one-party state. And so they need to look at those candidates who are running in the primaries. They need to look at those voting records. And if those people, no matter what they say on the campaign trail, if they are not voting conservatively, they should not be elected.
Yeah, that's a fact. Harriet, you come back anytime. Please keep going. Or better yet, probably just leave Congress and go be governor of Wyoming. I'm probably moving there soon. I appreciate you very much. All right. We're not done yet. Hang on. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And this is a little different, but one of our wonderful guests on yesterday's show, Christine Yergin, she should get credit for the composure she showed. You see, during the interview, I couldn't see it. My monitor was too small and I was busy talking. During the interview, she kept getting attacked. She kept getting attacked by a fly.
And it takes a parent willingly trying to indoctrinate their child. And it takes a parent willingly trying to
And it takes a parent willingly
That sucks. I hate flies. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.